I'm Brian Wilson alongside Larry O'Connor.
Gerard Robinson is a resident fellow for Education Policy Studies at American Enterprise Institute. He formerly served as the Commissioner of Education for the state of Florida and Secretary of Education for the Commonwealth of Virginia, so he knows a little thing about this. Mm-hmm. Thanks for joining us, Mr. Robinson.
Thank you for having me.
So we're talking about this policy that was articulated Friday morning by the Department of Education of the Obama administration, saying that any public school that receives any funding from the Department of Education must comply with transgender bathroom and locker room rules. Before we get into the actual administration of these policies, can I ask you, what kind of money are we talking about? What does the Commonwealth of Virginia get from the federal government, and how is that money applied at the school district level, the Department of Education federal funds?
So Virginia and most states receive federal money, and it often will come through two categories. The largest category is often money for poor and low-income students, and that's through Title I. Second, you have federal money that is administered to school districts, and that will come through students who are English language learners, students who have special needs, and students who have other challenges as well, both emotional, developmental, or academic.
So basically, the Obama administration is saying, follow these rules with regard to transgender access to bathrooms and locker rooms, or we're going to punish the poorest people, the special needs people, kids with autism, kids with Down syndrome, kids with other handicaps. That's who's going to suffer if they cut off the funding.
Well, all students across the board will find themselves challenged, because the categories that I mentioned are students who receive certain categorical funds because of one category. But we also have to remember two things. Number one, the U.S. Department of Education released guidelines, and these are more a early nod to say that we are still going to give you an opportunity to establish state and local policies to deal with this. Part two, if you did not do so, then one option is to withhold funding. But before the Department of Education or the Department of Justice will likely withhold money, they will do what they've done in Illinois and what they've done in California, which is to reach an agreement between the school system and both DOJ and or DOE to come up with a resolution. But I can tell you, even though I know from a big picture standpoint, it sounds like it's just a guideline, there are many families, superintendents, teachers, and others who are simply scared and unsure what this will mean for their school system.
Well, it's a rather ominous letter when you read it that is being sent out to all these school districts around the country saying, look, you know, it would be a real shame if you lost your financing for some of the federal financing that we give you. It'd be a real shame if we had to drag you into court. But, I mean, when you have this written by these two key players in the Department of Education and the Department of Justice, it sort of carries with it, as the New York Times described it, an implied threat.
Well, for some, it's definitely looked upon as an implied threat. And that kind of threat, if we can use that term, we saw in the 1960s when there was some pushback from states as related to implementing Brown v. Board. In some instances, there was money withheld from schools. In other instances, the threat resulted in states making a change in the law. The difference with 2016 is that you've got a segment of the student population, many of them who have been harassed, have been bullied, are victims of violence, are trying to figure out how can we make sense of the law dealing with the bathroom while at the same time trying to balance the needs of transgender parents, students who have equity rights as well.
So we interviewed the president of the Frederick County School Board on Friday, and he said that they've had policies like this in place for 3 years. And he said something interesting to me. He said, you know, if there is a student who is uncomfortable with a transgender individual in their locker room or in their bathroom, they will make accommodations for that student who feels uncomfortable. They'll let them use a private bathroom or facility. My question is, why don't you just do that for the transgender individual and allow the kids who are not transgender to continue about their normal life?
Well, the way that the guidance is written at present, you would think that this has never happened before or that in the case of North Carolina, this is the first time we've had this happen. There are school systems for the last 5 years or so who've actually had that policy in place, but you do have some students and parents who believe that that type of policy stigmatizes a student and puts him or her in a pretty bad situation. Under those circumstances, the DOJ and the DOE says you must treat that student equally and based upon his or her preferred identity, not his or her biological sex or gender.
Well, but hold on. I mean, I understand that, you know, we don't want to put these kids who are going through this traumatic thing in a bad spot. I understand that, and I'm sensitive to that. I really, truly am. But what about the kid who feels equally as uncomfortable changing, clothes in a locker room for PE with somebody of the opposite sex?
And here's where parents, advocates, educators, people at the local level, this is where they have to coalesce and decide what's common sense, what's good policy, and be able to use data to separate fear from fact. We can't have a national discussion about what D.C. thinks is important for Richmond, California, or Richmond, Virginia, without people in both areas making sense. And I can tell you, this is going to be a tough issue for a lot of people, because not only is it emotional, but it's also political. But when you have at least the proposed threat of withholding of billions of dollars in funds, we better really think, be consistent and look at this, not using bathrooms as the subject, but keeping children and education on the forefront.
Our guest is Gerard Robinson. He's an AEI fellow, American Enterprise Institute on Education, but also the former Secretary of Education for Virginia. 30 seconds left. Do you predict that some districts or states might start foregoing federal funding and say, you know what, we can do without this. We won't take your federal money. We want to be able to have control of our own destiny.
There are local school systems and residents who will make a push to stay step back. We'll have to see what state chiefs and governors decide to do, but I will say that there will be a groundswell of interest to do it one way or another. What I hope mostly is that adults realize that we're dealing with children and not solely public policies, and by doing so, we'll find a common sense approach to something that has a national priority and national repercussions.
Yeah. Well, sadly, common sense approach and dictates from Washington, D.C. Across the board to every district in the country usually don't go hand in hand. It's not common sense. Yeah. It's a direct order from high above. Yeah. But we appreciate you joining us, Gerard.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Appreciate
it. Gerard Robinson. Once again, you can look him up over at American Enterprise Institute.